The teaching of Dogen that I always, a line that always comes up is from the rules of meditation, which is, why are training and enlightenment differentiated since the truth is universal? You know, basically, since everything's a Buddha, you know, what are we doing? You know, why study the means of attaining it since the supreme teaching is free? Since we all possess the Buddha nature, what are we doing? And this is a real question, and Dogen puts it, you know, in the way we translate it, when the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. Actually, it's a bad translation in my mind, because when you say when the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost, actually, the nature of life is the opposites are always arising. That's actually what good and evil is, like we were just discussing and just chanting in the scripture. Good and evil are the opposites. It's not that it's when you cling to the opposites that the Buddha mind is lost. Just the fact that this is good to do and that's not good to do isn't a problem. That's life, and that actually is what training is about, is trying to do good and not bad. But if you cling to something, even cling to good, it becomes a problem. And the way we bring the opposites together is, how do we make training and enlightenment one? You know, so there's not like, I'm doing this thing, there's this enlightenment, and there's this training, there's this practice, and there's this magical thing called enlightenment that would be a nice thing to have, and I really would like it. And what training is in Buddhism is really behaving in an enlightened manner when we're not experiencing it. You know, that's what training really comes down to. You're showing gratitude. You know, just like we had breakfast here, we say the five thoughts, a blessing, expressing gratitude for the food. Do I always feel grateful? Often I'm not, no. You know, often I'm not even thinking, you know what I mean? It's, I'm just saying the five thoughts. But I'm pointing myself, trying to kind of awaken that there's something to be grateful for here. When you experience the gratitude, in a way that's an aspect of the truth, of the deeper reality, and in a way is an expression of enlightenment. You know, the grateful person, the willing person. Just like the precepts aren't this structure that's binding you. The precepts are just pointing you, as Dogen said in the Shishogi, there's no subject and object for anyone who dwell herein. What they're saying by that is, by just doing what's good, you're dropping me and you. You're just doing the good thing. You know, instead of thinking, oh, what's good for me? What's good for you? What's my need? What's their need? You're trying to be still enough and aware enough that you see what's really the best in the big picture. Whatever that is, whatever your perception is at that moment, it may not even be correct, but all you can do is your best perception of it. And that's training, just that, do following that, what is your, what you're picking up as the best thing to do. So training in a way is our willingness to do what's good to do, even though we don't feel like doing it. When we feel like doing, that's great. That's good karma, and that's actually putting us in harmony with enlightenment. And parts of us are doing well, just like we all know people who are just wonderful with something, right? You know, you just watch them and you just think, wow, the way they, you know, I'll watch a mother sometimes with a child and just think, oh, she's a wonderful mother. You know, just, there's so much love and, you know, coming out of it. In a way, that's enlightened behavior. You know, that aspect of it, or just the willingness to do, you know, something, and, you know, just somebody automatically, just like I'm going to be hearing an interview with all these people, how they dealt with when the freeway collapsed in 89 in Oakland, and a lot of people just immediately went into the wreckage and started to rescue people in cars, and you just think, wow, that's... in a way, in life and action, that they're risking their lives, which people do all the time, to help being. You know, there's lots of jobs in which, you know, God, a firefighter, you go into a burning building. So, whenever we, in a way, let go of just looking at how I'm feeling, what I want, what I need, and see the bigger picture. Just like, you know, the fact, like all of you who have a meditation practice, part of it is the fact that you're doing it even when you don't want to do it. Because nobody always wants to meditate, unless you have amazingly good karma, you know, and that's the merit of something. Just like when you want to do it, it's like, you know, that's great, but a lot of that's not the training part, that's the good karma part. Just like I don't have to think, you know, am I training when I'm grateful, when I'm grateful? Well, that's not training, that's good karma. But it's not, there's no effort involved in, wow, you just gave me what I deeply wanted. You know, thank you. You know, if I deeply want it and you, you know, do it for me, I don't have to kind of summon or do anything. Get the gift of that you don't want it. It's like I remember, you know, somebody, you know, we have jasmine growing along the, you know, the on the backyard. It grows down the middle of that path and then up along the trellis there. And somebody very nicely, in trimming it, cut it straight across where it's growing up to the garage. Obviously, they weren't an experienced gardener. The principle that's going to kill the jasmine, you know, any of the jasmine that's up there has to go to the ground. Now, the person obviously didn't know that, and obviously I wasn't grateful. I didn't think, oh, that's so wonderful. But on the other hand, I had to think, this is somebody who's helping. You know, this is someone, their intention is fine. I mean, they were doing what they thought was good to do. And I just had to, and I should be great. You know, here's somebody who's helping me for free, donating their time, doing probably what is their best. And you know, for me, it was training to kind of bite my tongue and be grateful anyway, because that's, you know, I'm sure if, you know, you spoke to the person, they, you know, I didn't get upset with them, because, and that was, you know, an example of training, that, you know, just like getting a gift you don't want, and you should still be grateful. The person giving it to you is not giving it to you because, wow, I'm giving them what they don't want. They're giving you a gift, they're thinking, wow, that's what you need. Just like someone who very nicely, who was coming here, knitted me a multicolored woolen cap, like with a rainbow of colors. And first of all, I have a lot of woolen caps already. Secondly, it's never been my, even not being a monk, it was never my style to want to wear this flamboyantly colored cap. On the other hand, somebody knitted it for me, you know, even though when they gave me a second one, I said, I think I have enough. Like, one's plenty. But, you know, and so the training is making the effort to do what's good to do, either spiritually for ourselves, mental, spirit for the world, for our families, our jobs, whatever we're doing, you know, there's a greater good. This is what's really good to do here. That's training. The enlightenment is actually all the positive things, you know, that when the self falls away and we feel like this deep connection, all these ways, you know, that are pointing us in the right direction, which we can often have. Just like I was saying at the end of, I did a retreat yesterday, and I recently started saying, notice how you feel when you walk out of here. Most of you are going to feel more, just more peaceful, a little more connected. Like, you'll look at something, it'll just be a little more there than it usually is because your mind's not as busy after a day of practice. You know, instead of being caught up in your thoughts, you just look at a flower and you notice it a bit more. Mm. Or just a little sense of just being more together. You know, you go, well, is that deep enlightenment? It's not deep enlightenment, but it's an aspect of enlightenment. Because enlightenment is, and from a Buddhist point of view, is just, in a way, can be expressed as not seeing everything through the angle of the self. That you realize the self actually is just this little speck, and you're getting it from a perspective that's deeper when you aren't just looking at it like the self. I mean, there's lots of ways to express it, but each thing that points us in training that's positive, just like that gratitude, points us to it. And sometimes when people are doing really well, you know, one of the signs is usually they're grateful for everything, and it's really nice. Example I like giving is people I've known who, you know, are, you know, like I've been quoting recently someone as an example because it's a good one, of someone who was just in, was in a lot of pain in an ICU unit, but when I spoke to them, they said, this is the most, they're just filled with gratitude. You know, and you realize, okay, you know, if by any external definitions, this is not a good place to be. You know, none of us want to be having what the person had, extensive surgery that is causing an awful lot of physical pain, immobility because of spinal and neck and head surgery. And an aspect of training and enlightenment is, the person very nicely said to me, how do I stay this grateful? Because they were just filled with gratitude. I said, you can't. You won't stay this grateful. Even though she put it very nicely, how do I not get upset when my husband, who is a Sangha member, refuses to fold the laundry the way I want him to do it? I say, well, that'll take really deep enlightenment. You know, because that's a hard one. You know, and in a way, what training is we're expressing a longing for something boundless that's really inexpressible. Just like I was using Bodhidharma, where he was saying, you know, that you're seeking the sublime, you know, just as a word that it was translated as. But that effort to bring us in harmony with this reality is training. You know, the reality that there's something deeper than me. And a lot of our suffering is when we can't express that. You know, we're stuck with me, this burden of the self. And in a way, when you experience an effortless oneness with this boundless, that's enlightenment. But the effort to do that, that longing we have, is the training. That we know that there's something more, and that this will help me get there. And it will. Like, if you're not grateful, you're expressing delusion. When you express that gratitude, when you cultivate that gratitude, which we cultivate not by feeling it, but by trying, reminding ourselves, just the same way as I'll eat something, I'll remind myself, be grateful here. I don't always do that, but I do, you know, sometimes, you know, just kind of think, wow, this is really, you know, good, you know, just like we, the first line in our mealtime thing is, think deeply of the ways and means by which this food has come. And I suddenly kind of think sometimes, how many thousands of people helped my lunch get here? Maybe millions. If you really kind of add up how many people are involved, you know, in that piece of bread alone, you know, in even if you're doing it from your own garden, endless beings have helped, you know, a lot of things have gone into that garden that we're getting the merit of. And when we experience daily life as a natural expression of that boundless nature, we're really, that's enlightenment. You know, when we experience it, but the faith that allows us to express it when we don't experience it is pointing us in the direction of the truth that's deeper than the self. And that's what liberates us. You know? And training kind of emphasizes an aspect that is a process, that we're learning this stuff, we're doing stuff that brings us in harmony with the deeper truth. You know, all the things, just like doing a ceremony like we did today, we're both giving the teaching to ourselves and helping others hear the teaching, because you're doing it as a group. There's a power of doing it as a group. You're bowing to something deeper. You're offering incense. You're expressing gratitude for the fact that we're here. And that is not something, you know, people, you know, you can't take for granted. These things are, you know, all gifts, you know, that, you know, we're being given. You know, just like the fact that there is a teaching, because, you know, a lot of people are born in situations that they don't even have any exposure to something that isn't pretty deeply diluted. You know, that's actually not going to help them find peace or, or a deeper truth, because it's really pointing them in the wrong direction. Because it's bad. Just like in that thing, I notice it kind of grates on some people sometimes when they talk about heresy. I don't think I would translate it as that word, because it often brings up the wrong karma. But it's just delusion, you know, which most of us can relate to, because we all have plenty of it, you know, delusion. So, but just looking the wrong way or believing the wrong things or making the wrong things important. You know, just like I was talking to somebody, you know, at the retreat yesterday, and it's just like, yeah, you can do all this stuff, but it's not going to necessarily, you know, being successful in that way, it won't necessarily make you any happier. You know, it's like the world's full of miserable, successful people. You know, all you have to do is kind of be around them. You know, it's not like that makes people's lives good. It doesn't make it bad, it just doesn't solve, you know, it's not the solution. Or to think just concentrate, you know, like just being working all the time is going to make you happy, which, you know, our society kind of promotes. You know, and the challenge of training is to see this flow of circumstances in our life and not get caught up in it, but just to be willing to kind of see what's needed here. How do I direct the flow of my life in a way that's useful? And it's actually a skill. You know, just like we were talking yesterday at the reading for the retreat, where somebody used as an image of that, whatever you do, you have to learn how to do it. And he just used the image of learning how to bind books. He said, you start doing it, and it doesn't come out perfect. And after a while, by just doing it, they keep getting better and better, and you don't even know exactly how come you're that much better, which is often the case when you learn a skill. It's like, God, I couldn't do this before. Now I'm doing it. Now I know how to do it. And I can't even explain to someone else how I know how to do it. And in a way, that's training too. You're learning how to let go of things, how not to go with difficult conditions, and how come I'm not getting so caught up in it? Just like I remember somebody telling me, you know, who practiced here for a long time, you know, I remember when they started practice, they told me, how do I have strong feelings and not react to them? And then I remember a little while later, she said, you know, I had strong feelings, and I'm not kind of acting on them anymore. That's good, isn't it? And I said, not only is it good, it's sort of essential, you know. And then after a while later, she kind of goes, actually, now whatever happens to me, no matter what I feel, I realize it's all me. You know, that none of it is, you know, has to do with anybody else. It's all me. And I thought, okay, they, you know, and that's training. They slowly got the teaching in, started to see their life through it, and then could start making the right decisions to do things by just realizing they don't have to react to the feeling. You know, they could just see what's good rather than, wow, how do I not follow a strong emotion, which can seem inconceivable initially. You know, it's like, how could something bother me? And actually, if you're not doing well, you can't. You know, it's like, you know, you have to work at it some for some people just to be able to do that simple thing of having a strong feeling and not, you know, God, can I really be angry and not say something? Or not do something. Anyway, any comments as I'm talking on? Anybody have comments about their training or enlightenment? What do you think about your enlightenment? Anyway, you know, and when you, a lot of times people don't look like that in just talking about teaching and practice, you can emphasize, in a way, when you're talking about, you know, when you emphasize kind of how we're transforming ourselves, that's talking about training. When we talk about the deeper truth, that's really talking about the enlightenment, you know, and the two are both there. It's just like, one of my favorite stories in Zen is where the master asks his disciples to give a write down their understanding of the teaching, and one writes, "The mind is a mirror bright. One must clear away the dust constantly to keep the mirror clean." And the teacher saw that's a good teaching. Another disciple, the sixth patriarch, wrote, "There's nothing from the first, so where can the dust alight?" Now that's actually talking about enlightenment, to see that in a way there isn't dust in any fundamental way. But on the other hand, the training is you have to, the daily life is clearing away the dust, you know, kind of doing what you can, just like, you know, my daily life, you know, it's like, what am I accomplishing by cleaning? It's going to just get dirty again. But it's, that's training, part of what's good to do is to clean. You know, the fact that you haven't accomplished anything fundamentally because it'll just get dirty again doesn't mean that you don't still clean. Did you have something?
I did. So what came up in my training today was perfectionism. And I think that relates to the dust, the dusty mirror. You know, I keep trying to clean it and it's still dirty. And the trap of perfectionism, where, you know, you're trying to do better. I'm never going to be perfect, you know, and then you can get into this striving thing, and it's not about striving. So do you have any teaching on how to not get trapped in perfectionism?
The main thing with perfectionism is just taking the teaching to heart that there's always dust, that there isn't a perfection. That's a delusion. I mean, the perfection in Buddhism is the perfection of us letting, is us seeing that in a way it doesn't matter. That's the perfection. Perfection isn't that we'll ever clean anything completely. It's like the saying in Zen, most rooms could use a thorough cleaning, but even a million cleanings won't clear away the dust completely. You know, so, you know, the job isn't to have an idea of where we're going. The job is just to do what's good to do here. And the perfection is actually not being perfect, but just letting go of what we're doing so the deeper reality can come in. Because as long as we're looking in terms of the opposites, when the opposites arise, they're always there. So if we look at it in terms of good and bad, there's always good and bad. In fact, you know, I doubt if I could have a day in which I could have done this better. You know what I mean? It's like when you look at it with a judgmental mind, which isn't wrong, it's just the nature of things, because I judge, you know, just, okay, did this go well? Did I do my best? Is this the best response? Did I do what? Usually there's something that I could have done better if I look. And that's not a problem, that, you know, we're not trying to get a day, wow, I got it, today I got it, damn, got a perfect day. That has no, you know, because even today's perfect day is not tomorrow's perfect, you know. Mm-hmm. When I look back at when I thought I was doing well, I can now see things that were wrong.
Well, and it's like a self that's trying to become perfect, so there's a self there, and we're trying to forget the self.
Well, we're trying not to make it important, you know, not cling to it.
Not make the self so important and trying to be so perfect.
Yeah, I mean, if what you're doing is important, again, that'll create itself suffering, you know what I mean? If, you know, so feeling like you have to get things right, you know, just like a Buddhism, they'll say it's a teaching, you know, many Buddhist teachers have used. It's okay, the fact that you get things wrong, that you make mistakes, that you blow things. Because actually, that's just reality. As long as you live, you're going to be doing those things. So you can't make that a problem in the deeper sense. On a practical level, we don't want it. But on a practical level, there's always things going well and things not going well. And that's not... But we're not trying... A lot of it is just realizing all we can do is what's good in them right now, in our words, thoughts, actions now. And let's say you're somebody who's just made a mess. The same enlightenment, the same boundless compassion and is embracing you right there. It's not like it's saying, oh, I'll be there when you get better. You know, just like a good example of this is I've known people who started to have deep spiritual experiences, seriously. And they said, but I'm too much of a mess. And stop it by just feeling like, almost like I'm getting somebody else's good karma. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be getting something positive happening to me because I'm not doing well. And they shut things down by doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, because things aren't dependent on, you know, how we view ourselves. You know, it's in the sense that, you know, the same truth is always there. It's not waiting for us to be better. We may not realize it until we're better, but that's not up to us. It's just like we don't determine how we experience things any more than we determine how grateful we feel. The training is just to work at being grateful. And when we feel it, that's good. And the more we work at it, naturally, the more we feel it. The more I eat food and don't pay attention to it, the less likely I am going to be great. You know, just like the world full of people, just like even a cultural difference I like is, in American cars, they have all this thing so you can eat in your car. European cars have nothing to eat in the car. The idea that you want to eat in your car just isn't a concept, and you have to go, why are Americans eating in their cars? You know, it's hard to eat in your cars and really pay attention to your food. You know, it's like very few people are eating a gourmet meal in their car. You know, it's like, you know, because you can't, you know, you're eating in your car, it's not like you're paying that much attention usually to your food. You can, it's not like it's impossible to, but I suspect most people's. It's like somebody I remember, she was a monk, but she said, I really like eating and driving. And it's one of those things I've never liked doing. I mean, I've never done it. It's just one of those things in the sense of really eating. I mean, I'll eat chips or something as I'm driving, but to eat a full meal, drive, and still be driving, like, you know, eating that hamburger or you know, and French fries, and you're driving along, and I just thought, why? But on the other hand, due to karma, we like all sorts of things. But then it's hard to be grateful, you know, because you're driving. You're hardly paying attention, you know. It's hard to even fully recognize what you're eating as you're driving. But, you know, if we... But a part of the training is that it's the flow of training, both what we encounter and what we experience, what we're trying to do, is not something we really control. All we control is our efforts to point ourselves in the right direction. Just like coming here is an effort to point yourself in the direction of training. You know, and people will, just like I think just yesterday, like somebody was saying, I feel like I'm not doing as well in my practice. Maybe I should get here. I really need to get here more often, just because it helps them. In that case, doesn't work for everybody, but or we would have a lot more people here. But for people who are doing this practice, just doing it with others, hearing the teaching and doing that helps them. Hi, Molly. Just like it was cute when I was, last time I was gone for a couple of weeks, Reverend Dillis told me when she played a tape of me talking, Molly came in and went right to the tape player.
She was expecting to see you, and she was trying to figure out why she could hear you and not see you, so she's staring at it, expecting you to show up, and it didn't. It really puzzled her.
So anyway, that'll be her training.
She did. I think she made her peace with it.
Yeah.
Reverend Master, I remember talking about the opposites. I really found helpful. Reverend Master Jiyu talked about the third position. So you'd have two opposites, and then the third position, which was the non-dualistic place, because I think that's partly what, you know, the non-discriminating mind. Because our mind just constantly is weighing and good, bad, like, dislike, constantly. So it's trying to get us to
get out of that. The only way you find the third position is realizing it. The weighing it doesn't matter what you're doing.
Right.
As long as it's important, yeah. You keep weighing. And the way you do it, not that it's completely unimportant, but you take, as yesterday at the retreat, Diana said, take the charge out of what you're doing. You know, where if it matters, you like if you have to get something right, that's rough. You know, it's, you know, just like, well, if you're willing just not to get it right, you know, it's okay not to get it right, then it takes the charge out of it, and then you don't have to, in a way, you can find the third position. As long as it's really important, you know, as long as you make what you're doing, like I have to, this is vital, I have to get this right, it's awful if I get it wrong, you're never going to be able to get away from it, because that's the delusion. The enlightened position is you do your best and then you let go. It's not the important thing. You know, you're not training to get things right. You're training just to try to do what's good to do. And the fact that you don't always do it doesn't really matter, you know, in the spiritual sense. Like somebody who is messing up. In fact, sometimes, can you remember I'd be in the monastery and there'd be a monk who's having, not functioning that well and forgetting things, blowing things, and Reverend Master Jiyu sometimes would even, you know, kind of say, well, frequently, you know, would say, actually that person's doing really well, it's just at the moment other things seem more important for them to be focusing on than some of the practical things, like spiritually. They're just having strong stuff coming up and just making them not function that well. And you would think when you're looking at it, why are they, they're making a lot of problems by forgetting something that's inconveniencing a lot of people and causing problems. And actually, no, they're doing fine. It's just, you know, the important thing isn't getting everything right. You know, just like I remember reading, you know, something where Ajahn Sumedho, who was a disciple of Ajahn Chah, said, took him a while to realize that Ajahn Chah isn't trying to get everything right. We're trying to control things. He's just trying to let things be and, you know, do stuff, you know, but he's fine with things not being right or kind of mistake, you know, it's like it doesn't really matter to him that much. And that frees us. So the third position is really just realizing it in a deeper sense, it doesn't matter. You know, we're not trying to become something, you know, we're not trying to become something. We're trying to let go of holding on to something. And the most important thing to let hold on is the importance we give ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, if we let go of that, then that's, if you think of what liberation will be, that's what liberation will be. You know, you're not going to find liberated by being, I'll be liberated when I'm this perfect being. No. You'll be liberated when actually you realize it doesn't matter what you do. You know, or as another way of expressing it that has helped some people is, and somebody just quoted to me on the phone that they say that to themselves, that whenever there's something, a problem, they tell them themselves, nothing's going on here. You know, which means, you know, we're making something going on. And it's just stuff going on. And if we try, you know, and you're doing your best with this stuff, but it's almost like, you know, I cook a meal, nothing's going on. If the food comes out or it doesn't come out, it's just food. You know, it'll be forgotten. It's of no real fundamental importance. On the other hand, I do want it to come out, and I'll have feelings like, oh, yuck. I wasted it, or like, you know, like I burned something. I feel some feelings come up, but I realize, okay, who really cares? You know, what's the real importance of this? You know, and a lot of training is just kind of though. Pointing ourselves in the right direction. So having activities that point us in the right direction, you know, is part of Buddhism and every religion. That's the use of ritual and use of chanting things, saying things, you know, reading things, applying, you know, taking the teaching in, finding ways to point ourselves throughout our daily life. Just like I remember a nice example of it is somebody who was at a job, kind of servicing, driving around servicing something or other, and he had to get in, you know, every hour he's somewhere else. He said it made a huge difference when he just would pause for a minute, getting in and out of the car, and just to be still. And in his case, he would just say the three refuges, be still for a moment, and then go in. Now, in terms of time, that is hardly any time. Somebody even sure he spent a minute, just paused. Mm-hmm. But the momentum of our karma makes it hard to do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not an easy thing to keep pausing. You know, I can even remember I used to, I don't do it anymore because my computer made it not as easy to do, but it used to make it easy to do on one of my computers where it would just chime every hour. And I would just, okay, whatever I'm doing, stop for a moment. It was just nice to do it. It wasn't a big deal, and I'm sure I could figure out how to do it on my car and computer. It's just the option wasn't built into the computer to do that, at least that I could find. But it was a nice, you know, I just thought, oh, that's helpful. You know, as I sometimes on the computer, you know, I feel like I'm in a black hole. Computer problems will be like a black hole of time. You know, you'll think, oh, this will take a few minutes, and suddenly you've spent 3 hours mm-hmm. on something because, you know, that's the way computers are, you know, because you often can't find that little thing that makes, that's solving the problem. Anybody have anything else they want to say as we're...
And just, I think, how big the challenge of letting go of the self is. It's huge. I was listening to one of the Dharma talks from the Abbey that Mary actually had recommended to me. And there was this concept of renunciation that was the letting go, basically. And I thought, and there was, and she said, it was Reverend Orion. Reverend Master Oriana was speaking, and she said a thing about the that renunciation of the self means to let it go, so that you're not thinking about what's good for you, even, and you don't hold anything back. And then she did a little paragraph on kind of not, you don't hold anything back, not, oh well, but I'll keep this little bit so that I'm okay and protected, or I'll keep this little bit so I'm not being left out in the cold, or whatever it is. And I thought how incredibly hard it is to even conceptualize the kind of complete letting go that is being required here. It's tough.
Well, it's, well, the trouble also to look at it like ever like complete letting go, because I guarantee if you spoke to Oriana, she'll say, I'm holding on to a lot of stuff. You just, in the moment, you know, when something, training isn't, again, having an idea, you know, it's like when something comes up, you have the opportunity, you know, the same way it's how you be grateful for everything. Like, how do I be grateful like that woman in the hospital was? Well, I'm not that great. You know what I mean? That's not... Am I filled with gratitude? No, I'm not filled with gratitude. You know, all the time. You deal with what comes up, and you the training is just accepting, trying to deal with each piece that we encounter. You know, and at times you can, you know, it's, there's even a famous Zen line that I, that points us at. At times I raise the eyebrows of old Shakyamuni Buddha, and at times I don't. You know, a famous Zen master said that. At times, I'm behaving in an enlightened way. I'm raising the eyebrows. And at times, I'm just being this, or, you know, I'm caught in the self. And that's fine. The letting go, but in the moment, you can, you know, by following the precepts and just trying to do what's good, the opportunity's there. For, and each piece of karma needs help. So it's not like, the self is this self. The self is just a collection of all these bits and pieces, you know, that we have. And each piece can be liberated, you know, by helping, by working. Okay, I really make this important. Can work at making that less important. How I feel about this is central. You can work at that. So we don't let the self by, you know... You know, it's like Dogen said, complete renunciation and total enlightenment are the same thing. So, you know, you do it by, and that's what comes up in life, you know, just like something will go wrong. How do we deal with it? You know, and just like I've sometimes said, the way I can usually, I realize when I, because, you know, kind of sometimes people being a senior Buddhist monk, you know, sometimes it's like they'll ask how, you know, my opinion, how somebody is doing. And I realize most of it is just how grateful they are, particularly when things go wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing well. Mm-hmm. And often they don't feel like they're being grateful, but I see them being grateful. You know what I mean? They're having a hard time, but I can actually see, when you look at them from the outside, you can see they're still being pretty grateful, even though they're aware of all their ways, like they're fine, oh, this is hell, but they're still having a fairly positive attitude of mind, and I think, that's good training. That's sort of, you know, like where the rubber meets the road, where our karma hits, is things go wrong, how do you deal with them? Because when things go right, it's like getting a gift that you want. There's no training involved. You know, get given, when life gives you what you don't want, whether it's ill health, somebody's misbehaving, something happens, the wrong person gets elected. Whatever it is that we're being given that we don't want, how do you deal with it? Is whether you know, kind of are working at converting it, that little piece of karma. So instead of looking at the self like a thing, the self is just this big, and the less you carry, just like you can be somebody who's, like, you know, I'll be around somebody who's, you know, I was talking to somebody who really hadn't done any practice, a young fellow, and he was so obsessed on what everybody thought of him. I thought, God, what a hell he's in, because he's saying, well, how do I get people not to be critical of me? I go, you can't, you know what I mean? I'm trying to say, you can't, you're going to drive yourself crazy, which he's doing, by just trying to get this to life to work the way that he wants to work, rather than realizing the problem is him, not out there, but at this point in life, the fellow really couldn't take that in at all. It was just, how do I get this better? I think he still found something useful in talking to me, but I'm just saying, you know, it's a kind of delusion that just makes life hell. But we all have parts of that delusion, and we can free ourselves from parts of it. Just like, you know, I remember, you know, naturally as a monk, you know, I cared a lot what Reverend Master G thought of me, and I had to just accept, you know, at times, you know, that it's okay if she's, like, upset, you know, like, you know, because that's just life, you know, anyway, anybody else have to?
I thought what Janelle said tied in nicely with the perfectionism, because for me, again, I found it helpful to put in this language, make the self smaller. It's like, you know, there's a lot of Dillis in what I do, you know, make the self, it's not that the self is going to go away completely, it's always going to be there and want what it wants, but I can make it smaller, I can make the clinging smaller, so it's not going to be perfect, it's just going to be better. Let go a little bit more, you know, each time. So that, I'm not going to be perfect, but I can still do better.
Well, the point in training is always to keep. Point in training is always to keep in mind, we have a tendency to think in terms of either or. Well, almost everything in our practice is a continuum. We're doing better with something. You know, it's like, for one thing, you don't get rid of, because you're always part of the picture. I mean, it's like, there's no reality that I'm going to experience that I'm not in it. Because that would be utterly useless, deluded, and wacky. So it's not like I'm getting rid of Kin Ray. I'm just realizing I'm trying to teach the thing that what I want isn't any more important than what they want. You know what I mean? You know, it's like, and it's a continuum, because naturally, you know, I'm much more aware of what I want. You know what I mean? There's no way to get around that. I'm sort of the central character.
You're always with you.
Yeah.
You can't get away from you.
Yeah. And it's, you know, so it's not like we're trying to eliminate the self.
Yeah.
We're just trying to kind of see it in a more, more enlightened perspective, which is, you know, and as long as we're really important, a good example of this, like, as long as what you're doing is a drama, you're deluded. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's not a bit, you know, as long as there's something dramatic about your life, it's a delude, you know, there's a deluded aspect. Even dying is actually pretty mundane. Yeah. I mean, God, everybody does it. You know what I mean? Like, everybody does it, so how important could it be?
That's true.
On that profound note.
Have a good trip.
This is so much fun.